Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Pivot to Asia programme. My name's John Harrison. China naval forces have passed through waters south of Taiwan and carried out military exercises in the West Pacific, the latest in a series of drills that Taiwan has criticised as amounting to intimidation. Now, Taiwan, which is claimed by Beijing as Chinese territory, has accused China of a saber-rattling, and the Chinese manoeuvres come at a time of heightened tension between Beijing and Taipei. And all of this follows strong warnings by Chinese President Xi Jinping last month against Taiwanese separatism. To talk about this development, I welcome to the programme a researcher at the City University in Hong Kong, Bryce Svirchen. Welcome to the programme, Bryce.
Afternoon, John. Pleasure to be here.
Now, Bryce, it's an interesting situation, is it? Isn't it? I mean, it's not the first time we've seen this sort of development between mainland China and Taiwan. But what, in general terms, do you think China might be attempting to achieve?
Well, I think that at the moment we see a confluence of issues taking place to which Taiwan is now falling into. Recently, there was the rewriting of the constitution of mainland China, allowing for the elimination of term limits for the president, discussed as the possibility of a Xi Jinping administration for life, perhaps. The Taiwan issue features prominently in this regard, because as many know, Taiwan is a doctrinal issue for the Communist Party of China due to the historical origins of the modern one China state. Yeah. But also, you see increasing tensions regarding trade with the United States and China. I do think that the recent calls to tariffs, the threat of tariffs, is also partly responsible for raising tensions at this moment.
Yeah. Okay, a lot of issues in what you just said. Let's try and unpack that point by point. firstly, you mentioned that this is, you know, a doctrinal issue. And could you explain more about exactly what you mean by that? And you mentioned one China, one state. Are you saying then that the Chinese Communist Party is returning to the basic kind of core issue that China must be great again to make China great again? And one of the ways to do that is to make sure that China now is one country, one state. It's already absorbed back into its motherland, so to speak, Hong Kong, Macau. And could this then Taiwan be the next area to once again become part of the original China?
Well, one China is perhaps the central pillar to the legitimacy of the one party communist state in China. Now, this, of course, historically, it's an attempt to ensure that China is never once again divided. There's a belief that China has other powers, European, Western powers, have throughout centuries always attempted to keep Chinese fighting against different regions of themselves, to keep the China from becoming too powerful on its own. And there's always been attempts to justify the breakup of China one way or another. And so the idea that China would be one unified state was central to the establishment of the party state, and continues to be one of the, as I said, one of the pillars that legitimize the party state today. The idea that China needs the party, because only the party can hold China as one state.
Right, but I mean, the Chinese nationalists departed to Taiwan, I believe, in 1949, when the Chinese Communist Party was founded and the new China, if you like, was created. Now, is it then a fundamental point in the manifesto of the Chinese Communist Party that Taiwan be returned to the motherland, or was that an add-on that was created later on?
Interestingly, it's never been the case that Taiwan has formally separated from China. It's a bit of a historical curiosity in the sense that the nationalists who retreated to Taiwan were, at the time, recognized as the government of China. And it was only decades later that increasingly the world recognized the administration in Beijing, taken over by the communists, as being the true government in China.
You're right.
But the government that retreated had been recognized. Now, they've administered Taiwan as a self-administered jurisdiction, but there was never a formal separation of Taiwan from China. Even to this day, ministers or politicians from Taiwan who speak about having a formal secession from China are, you know, picked out in the press in China, and there's threats to, you know, call for international arrest warrants for encouraging this sort of attitude. Mm. From the beginning, yes, it was central to the position of the Communist Party that there would only be one government. But because of this historical development, the retreat of the nationalist government to this island where they were deeply entrenched exists in a historical ambiguity, yes.
Yeah, so it'd be like Victoria Island in Canada just sort of ceasing to pay taxes and ceasing to allow Canada's naval vessels to dock in its small harbour in Victoria and just trading with the rest of the world regardless of Canada's trade policy and doing its own thing, but not declaring independence then.
Yes. I mean, the desire, of course, to be recognized as the legitimate sort of government of Taiwan, I mean, something that is practical, everyday terms recognized, but the big question of sovereignty, that's always the thorny issue as to whether or not it constitutes a sovereign state. That's the one position that China will not back down from.
Yeah, okay. Even though they don't have sovereignty, even though the Chinese and Beijing do not have sovereignty over Taiwan in practical terms, it's not their territory. They don't have the right to land their ships there, to put their soldiers there, and so on and so on.
Those are fighting words.
Yeah, they're fighting for it. Okay, now let's return then to the fighting. You also mentioned that you think this has got something to do with the increased tension, international tension between presumably the United States and China in terms of trade wars, the imposition of huge new tariffs on the import of steel and other raw materials and goods, white goods and other goods from China. This is all happening at the same time, isn't it? So my next question really is this whole issue with Taiwan and the increased tension between the mainland and the island of Taiwan, how is that related to the imposition of trade tariffs by the American administration, the Trump administration, and of course the answer to that as far from Beijing and the imposition of tariffs on American imports? How are these two things connected?
Well, I think we have to look at the deepening economic integration of Taiwan, particularly in the technology sectors with mainland China. So although it's the case that politically there's still a great amount of tension between Taiwanese and the mainland Chinese government, but there is nevertheless deeper economic integration taking place. I think the best company to look at here is Foxconn, which is the world's largest contract-based electronics producer. You know, this is where we get our iPhones and iPads and many other mobile products. Mm. So we have a company like Foxconn, which is based in Taipei, Taiwanese company, but much of its production actually occurs in mainland China. It's actually one of the largest private sector employers in mainland China. So we have a company like Foxconn, which is deeply rooted both on sides of the Straits of China, but it has to play the politics game with the U.S. So Foxconn had announced it was going to invest, you know, a certain amount of money in the American production as a way of sort of placating the nationalist protectionist sort of attitudes in America. Mm. So I think that we have to look at, you know, what is the mainland China's response to this? Well, I think that now that we live in this climate of threatening tariffs and making trade potentially more difficult or more complex, the mainland really just wants to assert that it's not just business as usual treating Taiwan as if it was an independent state or a separate market altogether. Mm. And I think it's this idea, it's not business as usual if you start looking at Taiwan as someone that you can sort of separate from China in terms of putting up tariff walls, in terms of wanting to sort of punish the Chinese government for its economic policies. And so I think that the tensions that are raised just at this particular moment, it's to remind companies, the Foxconns of the world, that there is still a very active political situation here, and you can't just be looking at appeasing the American, you know, sort of nationalist and protectionist government without also looking at your commitment to continuing to invest in across the straits.
Wow. Okay. So the other way of looking at it, of course, is that this all plays into Donald Trump's camp, and if these trade wars spark off a real military situation across the Straits of Taiwan, that means that in a way it's good, isn't it, for America, because it means that Foxconn will no longer be able to employ people in mainland China cheaply, and those jobs will have to be re-imported back to mainland America, which is all part of Donald Trump's sort of plan, is it not?
Well, I think certainly if you're able to agitate regional tensions in any part of the world, you create any sort of instability. But on that front, I think we just have to see how it plays out when these tariffs, which have largely just been sort of threatened, actually start if they're ever actually implemented. But I think that certainly it's the idea that China just won't allow Taiwan to drift, as it were, sort of drift to the Americans in terms of the economic relationships that they share. So, for instance, recently, mainland government censors blocked the websites for major American companies such as Delta, Zara, and Marriott for their websites, which, you know, for shipping details, billing details, listed Taiwan as a separate country.
Right.
Now, that might seem sort of benign because we're really just talking about, you know, shipping and mailing addresses. But there really is nothing benign about these issues from China's point of view. And so they really want to crack down on just the everyday sort of missteps, the everyday sort of treatment of Taiwan as separate.
Sorry, you mean that they're blocking websites where in Taiwan or on mainland China?
In mainland China,
okay, because I was thinking it would be quite difficult for them to block websites in Taiwan, but then I thought maybe not. Maybe the website cables go through China or something. Anyway, okay, so that's all really fascinating. What I'm very concerned is, of course, is that this isn't the first time we've seen this, is it? We've had in the past, we had the so-called Taiwan Strait crisis in 1996, when Beijing basically decided to display its strength with a whole series of missile tests bracketing the island and threatening commercial shipping on which the islands depend on. I mean, Taiwan imports some 70% of its food and most of its natural resources. So therefore, the mainland could actually strangle Taiwan. It could block it off. It could actually make sure that it, you know, it puts into a state of siege.
Well, certainly the stakes are very high. But I think one thing that we do have to look at critically is we live in an age today, largely from the conflicts in the Middle East, this era of drone diplomacy. You know, this idea that when there's a provocation or when there's a disagreement or lines are crossed in international disputes, that we can just sort of, you know, bomb our way out of them to make a statement and not have to commit to, you know, troops or any sort of long-term engagement. So this drone diplomacy of just constantly being militarily engaged on a short-term basis and making small attacks is sort of in our psyche now. And I would just say that doesn't really apply to the Taiwan situation. I don't think we have to worry about military provocations sort of periodically occurring, whether it's through war games or elsewhere, because China is not looking to pacify Taiwan or in the sense that they don't want to punish the Taiwanese people. They're looking for reunification. They're not looking to, they don't see them as an enemy. They just see the state as being wayward. Mm-hmm. So I don't think have to worry about any sort of short-term military operations in the same way that, let's say on Friday there's an event that happens in the Middle East, and on Saturday morning bombs are being dropped, and on Sunday we ask questions. You know,
no.
Fortunately, I think that China does have a much cooler head here. They realize that their own prosperity is at stake with any action they take on Taiwan as well.
Yeah,
and we don't have to worry about these sort of short military provocations the way that we are accustomed to seeing, and sadly, very sadly, in the other parts of the world.
Okay, let's take a short break here. Welcome back to Pivot to Asia program. My name is John Harrison. Today I'm discussing with Bryce Svierhun, a researcher at the City University of Hong Kong, the abrasive situation occurring between China and Taiwan. Now, Bryce, we've been talking about the situation in general, and you seem to be telling us that we shouldn't be worried about it because it's not that serious yet. And yet, last week, you know, we saw, you know, J-15 fighters taking off from China's sole operational aircraft carrier, the Liaoning, on Friday, on the 20th of April, for training in the area to the east of the Bashi Channel, which runs between Taiwan and the Philippines. I mean, it's not as if nothing's happening, is it? And Chinese destroyers carrying out offensive and defensive drills to test their capabilities. And the PLA, the People's Liberation Army, saying that the Navy carried out live fire drills in the Taiwan Strait in what the Chinese state media says it was a direct response to provocations by Taiwan. I mean, it's not quite nothing's happening, is it? It's not quite, you know, business as usual.
There is something to see here. There is something to see here, absolutely. Discuss sort of the economic situation, the fear that Taiwan will sort of drift away from China in terms of, you know, integrating with the global economy. But I think we also need to look back at the political situation with the Xi Jinping's sort of emergence as possibly not being term limited anymore. So the important thing, why this is significant that the Taiwan situation is flaring now, is that Xi, in many ways, has to demonstrate to the party faithful that if he's going to be extended a longer period of for his administration, longer period of reign, then he is going to be expected to take responsibility for these doctrinal conflicts, meaning that if you're going to be a leader who's going to be taking us well into the future, then you need to start looking at the sorts of conflicts that aren't going to be resolved today or tomorrow, but you're going to be responsible for the conflicts that we expect to be significant to our entire history. Yeah.
But this is a huge change in strategy then, isn't it? Because since 1949, I mean, it's, as you quite rightly said before, it's been a long-term strategy of the mainland Chinese to basically bring Taiwan back again to the fold, but without direct military action, because we're friends with them anyway. They're our people. They're all Chinese. But, and as you said before, involving, you know, thickening economic ties to slowly integrate the islands back into China. But what you're talking about now, Xi Jinping wanting to show, needing to show his strength to demonstrate that he's capable of handling doctrinal issues within the Chinese Communist Party. You're talking about a whole different policy.
Yes, and that's why I think we are living in a very interesting period of time where these are actually, as I said from the beginning, there's a confluence of events occurring right now that sort of contribute to Taiwan coming back to sort of the front page, even though we, you know, are looking forward to the, you know, negotiations on the Korean Peninsula and there's many other initiatives that are more pressing. But I think because of this particular confluence right now, the sort of emerging protectionism in the global economy mixed with the changing political environment in China, it makes sense to talk about both.
Yep.
So I think that definitely Xi needs to be able to demonstrate that he's willing to take on the long-term problems that are worthy of someone who's looking for a long-term period of rule.
Yep.
He'd also be looking to get support from, you know, the more sort of hard-wing elements of the party who fear that issues like Taiwan have sort of fallen on the back burner and for the favor of, you know, sort of creating the modern state, creating the sort of the modern economy. But there are still many people in the party who feel that we can't forget about these sort of, you know, doctrinal conflicts. And so it's, now in terms of the military action, drills and so forth, well, this is also very important for the People's Liberation Army to sort of remind them, you know, what some of our core missions are. And one of our core missions is control over all areas that we see as China. So it's an attitude that gets instilled in the military. Just as on the Taiwanese side, they will operate drills with the philosophy that, you know, it's, you know, core to our survival, that we have to defend ourselves. And so on both sides, you know, the militaries have to sort of be part of the philosophy as well.
Do you think that Taiwan could be used as a sort of chip in negotiations? I'm just extrapolating here. That Taiwan could be used as a negotiating chip in a way that the leadership in China is saying, okay, look, if you increase this trade war stuff, if you make it impossible for us to trade with the rest of the world or very difficult, we're going to go ahead with Taiwan. You know, we don't really care anymore. We'll, at that stage, we'll have nothing to lose. And despite the 1979 Taiwan Relations Act, which fully committed the US to defend Taiwan against a Chinese takeover, the Chinese will go straight in there and they won't care anymore because, you know, they've already been told that we don't really want to trade with you anymore. Go away, you Chinese. In a way, looking in that way, do you think that Taiwan could be seen as some sort of thing that they can just put on the table and gamble with?
Well, I think for the West, maybe Taiwan looks like a chip, but for China, it's the game, you know.
Right.
It's actually what China wants. It's not just something that they're willing to sort of put on the table. It's actually one of their main objectives.
Yeah.
I think I discussed on a previous show about some of China's actions in other parts of the, you know, South China Sea, building these islands and spreading their influence in other areas. I think in many ways that was an attempt to sort of, you know, broaden the chips that are available, let's say. If China were willing to draw back on anything in exchange for, let's say, less Western involvement in Taiwan, I think China then would be looking at scaling back building of these islands and so forth, because those are just strategic, you know, outposts. They don't have any sort of place in the sort of like the core, you know, philosophy of the state or anything.
Right.
They're not sort of like the the land of our blood and our brothers, these artificial islands. Those are the things that I think China in some ways might be creating with the anticipation that one day they will offer them up as chips to be given away. But I don't think that China will ever bargain away on the Taiwan issue.
Okay.
So you mentioned the Taiwan Relations Act. It's actually been referred to as strategic ambiguity because it doesn't actually commit the U.S. to defend Taiwan. It only sort of commits the U.S. to Congress to be sort of consulted if the president is to take action. But it's been used to sort of refer to by legislators in the U.S. for weapons sales, defense spending, and so forth. But
right.
the language here isn't the same as we would say. It's not the same as we would get in the NATO where we're sort of bound to protect the member state. That level of commitment is actually not in the Taiwan Relations Act. So appropriately enough for such a complex case, even the legislation that they have referring to it is itself vague.
Mm. What about U.S. arms sales to Taiwan? I understand that there was a $6.4 billion deal signed with Taiwan in 2010. Is the United States of America still exporting arms to Taiwan? And what sort of figures are we talking about?
Yes. And this is something that, of course, really enrages the mainland government, who will just come out and say that, America needs to stand by its own commitment to the One China policy. Now, of course, America and China have slightly different versions of the One China policy. But China, whenever there's discussion of military spending, will always say that this is, only going to damage relations continuing with these sales. Mm. Now, I don't have the exact figures of recent sales, but indeed, Taiwan will never be able to compete with China on size in terms of the size of its fleets and its armed services and so forth. So it really depends on quality. It depends on having the best military technology to sort of prevent an attack or at least delay any sort of potential invasion force. So technology is incredibly important to Taiwan's defense. So there's been some discussion that there's been some backlogs in the procurements from defense contractors coming out of the West, that Taiwan has been sort of asking for further and quicker delivery on critical systems, but they haven't received everything that they've hoped from the West.
But nevertheless, and the loss of that business, so to speak, the loss of that client, if somehow things turn out nasty and this trade war really took off and the Chinese feel they have nothing more to lose, and as you quite rightly said, it's the game anyway, it's the whole game, it's not just the cards on the table, it's the whole game itself, and they went ahead and sort of reintegrated the island back into mainland China, and it, despite the huge scandal that was caused in the international press and the threats of war and everything else, the Americans may actually think, well, we've just lost $6 billion worth of business here, guys. Is this worth it? That's another factor, isn't it? For just in the pure money terms, maybe the Americans won't do anything rash.
Yeah, certainly the military angle here as well, defense technology. But again, we are talking about the very small territory next to a very large one.
Yeah.
As much as the mainland has it in their ideology that under the one-party state to take back full control over Taiwan, and they will raise the specter of doing it by military means if necessary, it's certainly not the preferred way. It's certainly not the preferred means. Because if we return to an era where Chinese are killing Chinese, that in itself sort of makes it difficult to govern with the philosophy that we are the government of one people, if indeed the people are fighting.
Yeah.
Really, I do think that given that the cost in terms of money, but also just the human toll, makes a military operation, at least in the present state, seem very unlikely. But at the same time, the idea that the difficulty of an armed conflict would somehow prevent the desire or the change in any way the mindset would also be, I think, mistaken. China, especially under Xi today, very much wants to get away from the idea that you can just treat Taiwan separately as a matter of just day-to-day business. And that's the sort of drift that they're looking to avoid.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think the old last point is extremely important, that a country the size of China has to be ruled by consensus, doesn't it? I mean, you have to have the people on your side. If you don't, I mean, a small revolution, involving a few million people, could easily upset very intricate balances and systems which have been set up on mainland China, and the central government could easily lose control, and that's something that they want to avoid at all costs.
Well, absolutely. I mean, we have to consider the mainland political situation as well. Mm. As much as it is sort of, as I said, a pillar of the Communist Party, the idea of the one China state, I think that any actual war with Taiwan would be incredibly unpopular. I think that you would see potentially significant dissent. And so you imagine the situation where if China were to engage in a military conflict with Taiwan and all of a sudden have massive civil disruption at home, it would make the anti-Vietnam campaign in the United States look very small by comparison.
Sure.
of the people protesting the decision of their president. I mean, that's the only thing I can even think to compare it to, but
yep.
I think it would be on a whole other scale.
Yeah. You know? Okay, well, we've run out of time. Fascinating talking to you, Bryce. Sia Hun, the researcher at the City University of Hong Kong. You certainly give us some to think about it, some interesting perspectives there from almost on the ground. So thank you very much indeed for joining us today, and thank you very much, listeners, for being with us. I hope you found this program, and in fact, Pivot to Asia programs in general, interesting. Tune in again next week.